Nobody knows the full scope of the OPM data breach. At a minimum, it affects 4 million retired and current federal employees, but it could affect as many as 32 million. Well, how does the local technology community feel about that? I asked Jonathan Aberman, the chairman of Amplifier Ventures and founder of the nonprofit Tandem NSI.
Depends upon who you ask. But I think that there is a large consensus that this is a big deal for a number of different reasons. The first one is it's a big deal from the standpoint of national security. You know, without question, hackers, which appear to be associated with the Chinese government, have gotten detailed personal information for millions of American national security personnel. That is a big deal because we're not talking about just names and social security numbers. We're talking about names, social security numbers, where people live, who they associate with. The permutations are endless from the standpoint of espionage and influence. It is a real problem. It's also a big deal because for those of us that follow government acquisition and worry about whether or not the best technologies find its way into the government, this, for a lot of us, is a very much an echo of the rollout of Obamacare, frankly, where you had an issue that time where you had a contractor that had the prime and had an IDIQ and frankly wasn't up to the job. And a lot of us are wondering whether or not this is symptomatic of that problem as well. Why do we think that? Well, when you hear stories like the database not being protected by dual factor authentication, where somebody could just enter password, literally password, and get into the data, they're just things that don't even come to the level of best practices for the private sector, much less cutting edge cybersecurity practices. So, we're concerned and people think this is a big deal.
And there's some, I guess, irony in this, not a happy irony, but the federal government was kind of saying, well, Sony, you know, you need our help, and Home Depot, you need our help, and Target, you need our help. And here is the government itself looking even more hopeless or helpless in some cases than some of those private sector entities that were famously hacked in the last 18 months or so.
Well, look, the context of the North Korea situation in particular was a recognition by the Obama administration and DHS and so forth that we've entered into a new age where national security threats may just as easily be exercised in a vector through a private sector. So, for example, a server or an internet appliance sitting in someplace in a power plant out in Oregon, if it was hacked in the wrong way and was pushed out of service, might cause a cascading power failure, for example. And that could be a private sector issue that had broad national security implications if the attack was launched by a non-nation state or even nation state. So what was prevalent and important at that time when we were talking about North Korea was it was the first time a state actor had attacked a private sector company in the United States for geopolitical reasons. So you're right to make the connection, but let's be clear. What's happening here is cybersecurity is something that is a viral metastatic, if I may use the analogy, threat that is done by small groups of people rapidly. And you and I have talked on many other occasions over the last year about the whole issue of getting entrepreneurs and small groups of people directly involved in national security. This is just another manifestation of the reality of the situation. We can't solve these problems by allowing ourselves to be satisfied with the status quo because hacking, by its nature, is always looking for the next new technology.
And there is some information coming from like General Hayden, former NSA director, saying that, well, China would do this and we would do it to China if we had half a chance. Shame on us for leaving it open to places like China, because he says this is a perfectly legitimate international espionage target. And also the fact that it has not come onto the open market for sale, this data, gives one the impression that China has a long-term game plan in gathering this kind of information, if in fact it is the government of China, as opposed to a short-term thing which could shut down a power plant and cause an immediate problem, because I don't think it's not in China's interest to cause economic disruption to the United States.
Well, so first of all, we should state that neither you nor I are cleared to the point we're knowing exactly what the government is thinking about this, and I'm willing to wager a large amount.
I guess we're glad we're not clear because they don't have our data.
Well, yes. But in any event, I believe that there is much more to the story than we can discuss on the air. Having said that, there are a few things. The first one is, I believe that the use of electronic means for espionage is something that I'm confident we engage in our national security establishment. That's the first thing. The second thing is, many people have conjectured that because this data gathered from the personnel records has not found its way onto the internet, it must be espionage related. Now, ordinarily, I would throw my hands up and shrug, except in this particular instance, because of the nature of the data that was taken, for anybody who's listening who's gone through a clearance process to become cleared, you know how incredibly pervasive those questionnaires are and how comprehensive they are. That's what was taken. And so it's hard to imagine why a hacker with economic interests would necessarily care about that much information. So it's a fair conclusion to make. With respect to your other point, we should know better, shame on us. You know what? We should know better, shame on us. It's funny, Tom, a number of months ago, you and I talked about Edward Snowden and the whole issue of what do we learn about the national security establishment, all issues of privacy. And at that time, we were talking about the implications of it. And one thing that I keep coming back to is I think Americans are happy or willing to give up some privacy in exchange for national security protection. That seems clear. But what also seems clear is they expect the government to handle their data with competence. And to my mind, the biggest issue here with respect to the American population, if they're paying attention, is the breach here reveals a lack of basic cyber competence. And that's the part that I think for those of us that know the industry and know how this works, that's the part that we think is going to be hardest for the government to overcome. And they need to.
We're speaking with Jonathan Aberman. He is the chairman of Amplifier Ventures and the founder of Tandem NSI in Northern Virginia. And so, yeah, as you mentioned, so we have neither security nor privacy now with this data breach. And so is the tech community, especially the startups, are they saying there's a technological solution to this? Or is the technology really not the difficult part here, but the management and competence in thinking about it holistically so it doesn't happen?
Well, so first of all, there is a long-term issue with respect to whether cybersecurity startups and companies that are working on cyber issues outside of the federal government, the whole issue of non-traditional performer engagement, why DHS has opened up an office in Silicon Valley, we talked about last month, why DARPA is doing Project X. This is a big issue and has been for quite a while. What people in the startup community are saying consistently is, if you approach cybersecurity from the standpoint of awarding the contracts to the incumbents, if you allow the incumbents to sell their existing stack of technology, you may not be, in fact, providing the most up-to-the-minute solution sets. I'm aware of a number of startups in this region, for example, that have technologies that would directly allow a systems administrator to know if a hacker had set up camp inside the firewall the way these hackers did. So that's fine. What I will tell you, Tom, is that we have a long-term issue with respect to acquisition. And as long as we allow the incumbents to be able to push existing solutions, there will always be a generational divide between what the startup community is doing and what the incumbents are doing. Best example I can give you of that, a number of months ago, in an unguarded moment, I had a conversation with a business development guy at a large integrator. And we were talking about cybersecurity. And he asked me, so what do you know and who do you know that's got a great technology we can buy? And I said, well, there are plenty of people in the Tandem NSI community you should be talking with. And I said, so that's interesting. So what would you do with them if you acquired them? And he said, well, obviously, we would take that technology, we'd put it in our stack. And I said, okay, that's fine. So if your stack turns out to be the best cybersecurity stack, will you make it generally available around the federal government? And a moment of honesty, this business development director said, no, of course not. They have to buy it from us. I think that says it all.
Well, then, so where does that leave the startups then? I mean, the new technology vendors, the people that have a new mousetrap, if you will, what is their best route then to getting that mousetrap if they honestly believe it can help the government? sounds like the systems integration route may be a dead end for them.
Well, I think the systems integration route is in the process of changing for a number of reasons. Let's not lose track of what the Defense Business Board recommendations they made last go round. Let's not lose track of what the Professional Services Council in town here is doing and some of the things that Congressman Connolly and Beyer and others are doing downtown. I believe that there is a trend afoot to address this issue from an acquisition standpoint. The second thing is, because of where I sit with Tandem Ennis-Sein Amplifier Ventures, I can tell you that a larger and larger number of the integrators here in town are realizing that the startup community here can provide them with technology, and they will ultimately bolt them in. The last thing is, particularly in an R&D side, which again, admittedly, is a little bit downstream, but ultimately will feed back into programs of record. I see what's going on with DHS and the Pentagon going to Silicon Valley. I see the interactions that we're having with Tandem NSI with different agencies here. And I think that ultimately what you're going to see is from these different vectors, a gravimetric change. Look, $4 billion have gone into cybersecurity startups here in this region over the last few years. This is rapidly becoming Silicon Valley for cyber.